allow money to be an extension of what you are committed to. When folks make aligned, committed choices in their life, then beautiful things happen, right? That's the way that energy continues to flow and become an amplifier. And waiting for a certain dollar amount in your bank account to be generous, that's a tough way to live. And waiting for a certain dollar amount in your bank account to say, I'm going to be free and live abundantly, that's a tough way to live. But if you can start to make the choice to be generous and abundant and allow your money commitments to follow in kind, whatever way that works for you. Like you and I both shared, Rahul, that leaving a little tip or subscribing to a Patreon account for a few bucks a month because that hasn't been something we're used to, it feels like, feels uncomfortable for a little bit, right? So just start where you start. There isn't a right or wrong way to do this. Just start where you start.
Money is a key player in our day-to-day lives, and yet we rarely stop to consider the many ways in which we relate to it. A measure of success, the basis of feeling secure, or the precursor to a sense of freedom, or maybe even happiness. The narratives around money are as extensive as they are deeply ingrained. To unpack all of this, we're joined today by Mike Trugman, veteran accountant, as well as fellow podcast host and coach. We explore, how do we project our stories onto money? And where do our relationships with money come from? How can money be an inroads to self-discovery, as well as a tool for expressing our values? And finally, how do our money narratives play into the way we view and connect with others? Mike walks us through some simple exercises to start unpacking these important narratives we hold around money. We're reminded that we have the agency to hold our sense of self-worth, success, freedom, or any other value with or without money. On one end of the spectrum, money can be a mask hiding us from what's happening for us under the hood. And on the other, it can be a powerful medium to come into deeper alignment with how we want to show up in the world.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Woven Wings Live, where we bring you wisdom and tools for vibrant living. I'm Gabe Crane. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Rahul Didwania. And if you enjoy listening to us, please share our podcast with a friend and leave us a review wherever you listen to us. And you can also join our newsletter, which is linked in the show description, to follow along on our journey. This week's episode is called Examining Our Narratives Around Money. Our guest is a fellow podcast host and coach, Mike Trugman. He is a leadership coach. He's also an accountant, which is going to be a valuable background when we discuss this topic today. This is a big, big topic. It's obviously one that is foundational. It's about our security in the world, but it's also about so much more. And Rahul, I guess just to start us off, when you think about money and your relationship with money, what are kind of some of the ideas that come up here that you feel are relevant for our show today?
Yeah, thank you, Gabe. In no particular order, I was thinking about this a little bit earlier, even this morning, and I was like, man, money is on my mind a lot, you know, for better or for worse. And I think I've formed a lot of narratives around money and like not wanting to be thinking about money. But for whatever reason, you know, it's always kind of lingering there. Right. And I think there are a few different ways I think about it. You know, I think a lot of that orientation is rooted in sort of an immigrant mentality, you know, with my parents moving over here, the classic, you know, moving over, didn't have a lot, you know, to their name, and they built it up and sort of had this orientation towards finding stability and money really being the foundation of that, right? You use the word security. And I think a lot of that is part of what I've inherited. But then also grew up just around business, like both my parents are entrepreneurs. And then in college and onwards, you know, kind of when I started charting my own path, again, was around it, right? So I studied engineering and business, went into business, you know, and corporate life, and, you know, even started a business and then live here in San Francisco. And, you know, here there's a lot of conversation around money for different contexts, right? Whether as a scorecard for your success, whether as a means just to afford living in a place like the Bay Area, where, you know, any given day you talk to someone, something's going to come up about how expensive it is, right? And I think just this, you know, it feels like money is just always present. And then I think back also to a conversation that you and I had when you were my coach, Gabe, when we talked a lot about this, and it's like, you know, always, I feel like I'm still in process of changing my narrative and my relationship to money in a way that's more bountiful and positive versus, you know, more kind of repressive or stressful. And we're going to get into that, I'm sure, in a lot of detail. But that's, those are just a few of the things that came to mind as far as this topic is concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a huge topic. And, you know, I don't think there's any quick and easy answers in this topic. And so part of, you know, for folks who listen to us, you know that, you know, obviously we're working in a personal development sort of area, self-help. Rahul and I are both coaches. But at the same time, I think what we try to stay away from is a lot of the kind of get rich quick, kind of status symbol stuff that you'll see around coaching, you know, in our media landscape and especially on social media. And I feel like money is just one of those areas that gets exploited in that arena. And people are often looking for ways to come up in the world, you know, and so it's a core driver that we have inside us. So when we see ads targeted towards us around that, you know, it's an easy area to exploit. And so what I hope our conversation today will be about is really a deeper understanding. And I think Mike is just perfectly positioned to help us with that, with his backgrounds as both a holistic leadership coach and with his financial background. You know, I think there's a couple different layers to it. One is, you know, this idea around abundance that's out there, and, you know, getting into an abundance mindset or the art of manifestation, that you could manifest all this money. And, you know, these are certain principles that I think have truth to them. But there's also something that's missing in that equation, I think, a lot of the time when it's introduced. And I think part of that has to do with, you know, what is it that we really need when we're seeking money? You know, we talked about security. I think we're looking for wholeness. We're looking for a sense of safety, kind of rootedness in the world. And that can partially be provided by money and also partially not. You know, it's partially things that go far beyond money. And so it's really kind of a yes and. We really need both. And I'm going to kind of, when we were talking before this episode, Mike was just talking about how really what drives him is this question of what really brings us alive. And I think that that is a really key question. You know, that's really at the heart of what propels us forward in our life. Why do we do the things that we do? And I think this money conversation is connected to that. You know, it can't be disconnected. And so on that note, I do want to bring Mike, our guest, onto the show. Mike is a seeker, thinker, and feeler who cares deeply about seeing and being seen. He wears many hats and identities, but as I mentioned, he is a leadership coach. He is a CPA. He worked for a number of years in that field, and he is the host of Mike's Search for Meaning, which is an awesome podcast, which you can find as well anywhere you listen to podcasts. Mike has a background from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and he has a holistic whole person approach to healing and well-being that is rooted in a fundamental understanding of the mind-body-spirit connection. He's fascinated by human behavior and has studied various inner work modalities that deepen an understanding of embodiment, our individual and collective multidimensionality, and an understanding of how we both influence and are influenced by systems. And so, Mike, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with us. It's good to see you. And you heard Rahul and I here blab on a little bit about this big topic. Could you help us just starting out? This is a broad, vague question. It's also just an opportunity to comment and throw your voice into the ring here. But why money? Why is this topic important? Why should we spend time on a show like ours really delving into and looking at this topic?
There's so many things that I wanted to respond to. And when I was off camera and muted, at various points, I was laughing. I was nodding along. I see myself and you guys in a lot of ways. I'm going to answer your question. Don't worry. But I wanted to acknowledge you guys on camera, because before we jumped on here, I shared some appreciation about the way that you guys prepare for your show, the thoughtfulness that you bring, the nuance. And in my bio, I have there what you read to me, Gabe. I care deeply about seeing and being seen. And I can tell just by the way that you conduct this show that you really, you see each other, you listen to each other, you respond well, and I already feel really seen. So thank you. This is an absolute privilege to be here with you guys. And money, yes, money is a really important topic to cover. And the question was, why money? I think so. The way that I do my own work around money is very similar to shadow work. And so we project a lot of things onto money. And money, really, if you break it down, money is a story. It's a really powerful one at that, but it's not a law of nature, right? It's not something that you could just go outside and grow. I mean, people say money grows on trees, but it's a story that people have bought into. And over time, it's become so embedded in our reality that we project so much of our own stuff onto money. So I think a fertile ground to start on is that a lot of us project either really positive, really negative, or both qualities onto money. And I'll say a little bit more about what I mean about that. And then we can get into, like, Rahul, as a coach, I wanted to dig into your beliefs about money as an immigrant, but we'll get there. For me, I project things like freedom, stability, security, power onto money, right? So those are positive things that if I haven't done my own work, I think if I have money, that's the only way that I can have those qualities. The only way I can be free is to have a lot of money. And conversely, there's lots of negative things that we might project onto money. One that's really popular and is true for me is that money's the root of all evil. People who have lots of money are greedy, evil, selfish, right? And this inanimate object money becomes, it has all of these different things about me tied into it. Things that I haven't been willing to look at in myself, both positive and negative. Like, I haven't been willing to, if I haven't done my work, claim that I am inherently free. With and without money, I am free. I am at choice in my life. And with and without money, I am also, there's shadowy parts of me that are really selfish and greedy. And if I don't do my own work around that, then they unconsciously in some way drive me. So I know that's already a little bit of a mouthful, but I think it's important to talk about money because if we don't integrate the qualities of ourselves that we have put out there in air quotes, then they're going to unconsciously drive our life. And we're going to have no idea who's driving the bus or why we're doing what we're doing. We just think we need to go after money all the time.
Yeah, Mike, as you were laying all of that out, you know, I think I felt myself relating pretty strongly to both polarities that you presented there. You know, I think often Kirthi, my wife, and I will talk about how money is important, you know, and it is, right, in terms of what it can empower and enable. And I think that idea of freedom, you know, we look around in some of our extended families and friend circles where money is maybe not as available to people. And you see the kind of challenges that they go through and what they're not able to do when it comes to, forget even like, you know, living some flashy lifestyle, but like health or sustenance, mm-hmm. right? And I think about sort of Maslow's hierarchy, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. there is that element of safety that we've, you know, we keep coming back to here already that is connected to money, right? And there's that power there. But then the piece around freedom, you know, for a long time, I was like, oh yeah, money will buy me freedom. I used to unconsciously hold that narrative. And I realized that the more I held that narrative, right, the more I was losing my freedom to money, mm-hmm. because I was viewing it as this distant thing, right? It's what you said, like, hey, freedom, I can choose to be free now, right? With or without mm-hmm. money. And I think there's just something really powerful in that nuance and examining sort of where we're at, right? And what our sort of preconceived narratives are. You know, the thing that I'm also wary of is, hey, like we're three people that are, you know, relatively well-to-do, right? And is it one of those things where, hey, yeah, like the well-to-do people can always talk about having an abundance mindset. It's like, yeah, I live in the Bay Area, it's expensive, but okay, I'm here, I've been here for a while because I can technically afford it, right? And it's, I'm not in that position where, you know, I really just don't have enough money to meet those basic needs. And so the question here is like, who is this conversation for? You know, is it for us, you know, the people that maybe have enough money and still don't feel a degree of abundance because we're out of touch with these narratives? Or is it for everyone? You know, is there something that people at all kind of different ends of the spectrum in terms of, you know, financial means can relate to and can find something from?
Mm. You didn't wait long for some big questions, huh? I think it's important that I want to own the fact that, yes, what you pointed to is true. We are, from what I can tell, three very privileged people. And so I don't want to be dismissive of the fact that that's the case, that I have never been worried where my next even 1,000 meals are going to come from. And I was raised in a loving, nurturing household, and these are incredible blessings that other folks who are tuned into this might not have. But what I can share is, you know, what came up for me as you were saying that, Rahul, is there's this book that I read within the last year. It's called The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but Lynn Twist works with the Pachamama Alliance, among other organizations that are doing really incredible work with folks who are not privileged in the slightest bit. And there's one story that was coming up for me around, I forget exactly what the fundraising was for in the moment, but there was there was a corporation that was under fire because they were not meeting some sort of ethical standard of the time. And the corporation donated a large sum of money to the Pachamama Alliance, I think it was. And Lynn felt that it was a saving face move. Right? That it was, that wasn't an aligned, embodied, I don't know if that's the words that she would use, but it wasn't an aligned, committed use of money. It was not coming from a place of abundance. It was coming from a place of fear. It was coming from a place of, this will get everyone to stop talking about the negative way that we are being perceived publicly right now. And for the same exact cause, she gave a talk in what I think was Harlem in a group that was mostly women who did not have a lot of means. And there was a woman who had barely $25 to her name. Like, I think when she wrote the check for $25, she wasn't sure if it was going to clear her bank account. And she was so aligned. That woman was so aligned with what the Pachamama Alliance was doing and made such a committed act. It's like, this $25 is going to something that I care so deeply about. It would be an honor to put $25 there. And the way that Lynn described it in the book really landed with me, that $25 meant way more to her than the large sum of money that the corporation gave, because it was coming from this place of total embodied alignment. Now, I think I don't want to whitewash over the fact that that woman probably was having a really hard time putting food on her table. I don't know exactly what her family situation was like. There's so many dimensions that go into a conversation like this that we probably won't get to today. But there are countless stories I've heard of people who, with relatively little means, and there's still actually cultures in the world that operate without money at all. You know, that like that's how deeply ingrained we are in this story of money. There are cultures who are off the grid, who are, I would say, are probably living pretty abundantly and are really connected to the land and connected to nature, and probably aren't thinking, I don't have enough. I just need to get this number in my bank. They don't even know what that means. So, yeah, that's my, one of my initial responses to the privilege point is that in America, in a capitalistic society, yes, to pretend that money isn't a factor at all, to turn a blind eye to it, is ignorant at best and really harmful, probably. But there are other ways of operating and being in the world that if we ignore the fact that money is running the script, there's ways that we can live really connectedly, abundantly, with and without money. And I say with and without, you might notice that a lot in this conversation, because that's one of the ways that we can integrate the qualities that matter most to us. Like, I am a powerful man with and without money is a statement that I say to myself a lot, because I want to make it truer and truer in my nervous system that I'm not dependent on money to stand in what I believe in.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate you bringing it back to thinking about different indigenous peoples and people living closer to the land, people living outside of our Western material construct. And, you know, it got me thinking, some of my most powerful experiences as well with healing around not even money, but kind of going beyond whatever kind of Western realm we're discussing, where money is associated with shadow work and it becomes this whole trip, have come when I've been spending time with folks close to the land, and people who are living life in a little bit more of a harmonious way. And I guess as a starting point, I think you've started to take us there, but for people who are in our position, how do we start to peel the layers back? You know, you're saying, you're describing with and without money. You also mentioned freedom, you know, accessing this state of awareness that exists, you know, outside of money, and really us finding out what do we really need to actually live from that place and to experience health, vitality, creativity, love, connection, mm-hmm. All of these qualities, which, you know, as the saying goes, money cannot buy, right? And so where do we start if we are, as we are, you know, ensnared, entrapped in this kind of whole wonderful world of material bounty that also disconnects us from deeper truths? Where do we start with the process of untangling ourselves and returning back to this deeper understanding?
Well, like pretty much every element of healing work that I know, it starts with understanding where your stories were programmed from. So it could be really helpful as a first look to take a look at what your parents' beliefs were about money, how they programmed you to believe about money. I am Jewish. I know that you're Jewish too, Gabe. So, you know, there's a lot of trauma from the Holocaust and fleeing from the Holocaust. There's a level of like, is money healing that deep wound? So starting with just understanding your whole family dynamic and culture dynamics can be really helpful to understand too. But there's other really basic, like that's a whole different podcast that I'm not as qualified to talk about. I know that you've interviewed people about trauma, and I would encourage like people to look at their money stories around trauma. And maybe a specific one is, what are some of your earliest memories of money too? Like that one's easier to speak to than the deep trauma. So I remember when I was little, I forget if it was my mom or dad, but they had this little jar of money, and I became aware of that. And I think I was 4 years old, and I took a $20 bill from there because there was something I wanted. I don't even remember what it was, but my parents caught me. And what I remember, this is just the story that I remember, but I think my dad caught me and he said, "We work hard for that money. That's not your money. We work hard for that money." Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but I learned, I internalized among many other encounters, experiences in my life, you have to work hard for money. And if someone works hard for the money, I don't have the right to that money. There are people that don't believe that. That's been so deeply ingrained in my psyche and my consciousness that that's become a truth for me. So yeah, I think understanding where your earliest beliefs around money can be helpful. And then really basic prompts like people who have money are blank. And you fill in the blank. Everyone's got their own beliefs about what people who have money are blank. People who don't have money are blank. And that gives you an immediate clue into what are your beliefs about money. That's usually the best starting point. People who have money are, what are the qualities? People who don't have money are fill in the blank qualities. And I've already spoken to a little bit. I'd be curious to hear for you guys what comes up, because I think the best way to learn this work is to make it experiential, and we can kind of play in that realm if you guys are game for that.
I'm glad you took it there, Mike, because I was going to be like, oh, I want to try this out. yeah, no, I think that would be great. I'd love to make this experiential. You know, I think starting with that statement, right? The first thing that came to mind for me was people who have money are fortunate. You know, I think that was like the first word and concept that came to mind. And I think about just the, you know, and I think maybe that idea for me has been reinforced as I've like even heard people who have a lot of money talk about it. You know, people are interviewed on podcasts and stuff, right? And an example is I listened to How I Built This, where they interview entrepreneurs, and you always ask this question at the end. The interviewer asks like, hey, what role was luck and what role was like you, right? And you know, people answer it in all sorts of different ways, but often it comes down to like, hey, I was lucky to be born where I was born and the environment that I was born, to get the education that I had, to, you know, all these moments, you know, in my path to accruing wealth were lucky. You know, I think about this business that we ran, you know, a few years ago. And it's like, we have these moments we've identified. It's like, oh, we got, you know, we took off on Yelp. We had this one random web page that we'd forgotten about that got picked up by Google. It was just like random things that were like, and we're like, oh, I think viewing that as fortunate is, you know, just part of the way now that I've started to adopt it. But then I was trying to actually think, I hadn't really thought much about what you're saying, one of the earliest memories. And I was thinking as you were talking, I was like, what are my earliest memories? And I think there are a few that come to mind. One is like just getting a little bit of money during like birthdays and like holidays, you know, like in Hindu culture, there's like Diwali, where everyone, you know, kids get money from the elders, or our birthdays, you know, we'd get $11 or $21, you know, or tooth fairy, like, and I remember this idea of like saving up, right? And this idea that, oh, like when I have, you know, enough saved up, it'll give me agency to like do something, even though that agency had never been, you know, it's not like I was like lacking or that agency had ever been challenged. My parents provided and all that. But my mom will often remember this story where I think I was maybe seven and or eight, and I wanted to get a Super Nintendo. And my mom was like pretty, you know, she was kind of like skeptical and even anti like video games. She's like, ah, you get this, you get sucked in. That's not what you should be doing right now. And she will always remember this story where the thing that kind of like softened her to it was, you know, I asked her and she was like, I don't know. Then I was like, oh, what if I got it with my own money? Right. And she remembers that as this, just this like very like heart wrenching moment, you know, almost, or very like poignant moment for herself, which is like, oh man, he wants it like that badly. Right. And he's using this idea of his own money, right? Which is just like that birthday money that had been accumulated. And that's probably one of my like earlier memories, and maybe partly because it's been retold, but I think this idea of like, oh, okay, yeah, like I have this pot, you know, that's my own, that gives me the ability to like do things that I want to do that maybe not, you know, that other people might not want to do, and in particular, my parents may or may not support. And I'm realizing just as I'm, stop this monologue soon, I think it's like probably tied to this feeling around money enabling freedom, you know, mm-hmm. or enabling independence. And I think, yeah, I guess those are just, this is interesting. Just to think out loud here. I'll pause there.
I'm hearing also money is success, which that's a really popular one. And that's been true for me too. And how I built this is an amazing podcast, but I think maybe this is my projection, but something that's built into the show, how I built this is that the success is the fact that they make lots of money and have a certain amount of followership and stature in our culture, right? And that belief has held me back from doing so many things in my life, because that if I believe that money and stature is success, when am I going to get started on the thing? And that blocked me from doing my podcast for the longest time. And that blocked me from starting my business for the longest time, because I was terrified that I wouldn't be successful. I wasn't willing to put in the time to be successful. And I think that's very common. A lot of people don't get started because success to them is something that's so far down the line that we just never get started. And rewriting that belief for myself and doing it over and over again, this is a practice. This isn't a destination we arrive at. That's a fallacy. That's something that we all do with money. We think we'll arrive when we have $1 million, we'll arrive, whatever the number is. Making the choice that starting this podcast or starting my business, doing it from that place of it feels good to me is success. And I think money would be a beautiful thing to have, but that's not going to define my success, my operation that I'm running here, is it just gives us so much more freedom, flexibility, ability to move through the world. And it gives us, paradoxically, it gives us that abundance that we think we're seeking so hard out there in the world that it's inherent in us. And I think, another thing that I'm hearing here is that this has certainly been true for me. Abundance, we look at only in financial terms in a lot of ways. And I've had stories running in my mind a lot of times, like, I will be generous. Generosity is something that's important to me, but I only will be generous when I have this much money. I don't have enough money right now to be generous, which is a total BS story, but it's been programmed in me in some way. So making the commitment to be the things that I espouse to be, regardless of the amount of money I have. Like Tony Robbins tells a story about how when he had $7 to his name, he donated one of the dollars. That's a large percent of his net worth. But he said, I made the commitment to be generous. I donated one of my dollars of the seven. And then as I got wealthier, I just continued to build out that proportion. So as a commitment on my show, I mean, I was never donating to organizations because I was so deeply buried in this I'll be generous when story. As a commitment to my podcast, I donate $25, which might not sound like a lot, but to me, I do a weekly show. So it's $25 every week. And sometimes I do a little bit more to push my edge to an organization that the guest brings to me as an embodiment to my commitment to be generous. And when I see a gap in my life of this is a quality that I want to be, that I aspire to be, but I'm letting money be the blocker to that, I think it's always a beautiful invitation inward for how can I bring more X into my life with and without money.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great. It makes me want to kind of jump into this rabbit hole with you both and see where this conversation goes further. When I think about myself, I was talking about this with Rahul ahead of the show. You know, it's not my earliest memory, but probably a significant memory is having this conversation with my parents, around graduating high school, going to college, recognizing where they're telling me that there's financial support available to me, that's going to be part of my adult life, that you know, I'm not going to be leaving college with debt. In fact, it's going to be the opposite. You know, there's going to be like seed money to support me, and feeling like gleeful, like feeling super excited and happy about that. And then as life has gone on, feeling very mixed about that, feeling like more of a tension. Sometimes it's a feeling of guilt. Sometimes it's a feeling of kind of that kind of golden handcuffs situation, or just like being almost like trapped within having privilege that I haven't earned, and feeling this kind of sense of I have this resource, but it's not, it does not count as success because I didn't earn it. It was just given to me. So, and in fact, like, you know, it could say something, if I'm in a dark mood, you know, it could say something bad about myself because I am benefiting off that, you know? So there's certain narratives that go along with that, or I'm a freeloader, or you know, it's benefiting from nepotism, like things like that. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting for me is that, you know, my passions have moved me into the world of helping people, coaching, psychology, conflict resolution. That's always been my focus. There's been easier ways to make money. And if my goal was to make money, I mean, I guess the circumstance set it up so that I didn't need to focus on that as much. But if I wanted to make money, I would, you know, go down certain other routes. And then at the same time, that here's this tension where actually, in some sort of ironic way, I want to substantiate again, my work as a healer, a helper in the world through success. What does success mean, as you're pointing out, Mike? And part of that is financial, that somehow I will be kind of legitimate in my own eyes in the path that I've taken once I've been substantiated financially through that path, and not solely benefiting off the support that I've had through my life circumstance. And so, you know, I find that to be, I'm curious what you both think about it. But yeah, I find it to be kind of a, it can be a negative experience, like a negative feeling in my life, but it's also a driver for me to do things, to, you know, pursue success, even with the understanding that the financial component isn't really, that's not what it's ultimately about. It's not the core need. The core need is to feel like I'm making a meaningful contribution that matters, that's valued by other people, that makes an actual impact in the world, beyond just how it makes me personally feel. And so, yeah, so it's an interesting, I find myself wrestling with that challenge often around this topic. And it really is like a, probably a core driver of my behavior. You know, how I run my business, what I'm pursuing when it comes to, yeah, Woven Wings, this podcast, everything.
Yeah. So there's three things, and I want to bring them to your awareness because I know that once I start talking, then I might lose track of one of them. There's three things that I want to say about this. One is I want to introduce the way you were talking about earning it and being a freeloader. And I want to give an example for the audience about if that's the belief you have, how you can start to do your own inner work on it. So that's one thing I wanted to touch on. I wanted to talk about when I got my first paid gig as a coach, and juxtaposing that against my background in accounting. And I want to talk about, what was the third thing? Yeah, like having a lot of money, our stories about having a lot of money, what that means. I think that's really powerful. So if I get lost, I want to make sure that I put that all out there.
We got you.
Number one, when you started talking about earning it, and I didn't feel like I earned it and it was given to me, I was tracking in the back of my mind, what's the word underneath that Gabe doesn't want to feel about himself? and you said freeloader. Is freeloader the word, if you were to say, I am a freeloader, does that have a charge for you? Does that feel like, ugh, my body rejects that?
Yeah, but if you talk about like a word underneath, I think it's more around failure.
I'm like, a failure.
Yeah, you know, if you don't earn it, you're a I'm a failure.
Yeah. Okay, great. So in money work, and I feel it's important for me to acknowledge my teacher in this work, and she's one of the best coaches I've ever had the privilege of working with. Her name is Nadiezhda Tarnchevsky, and she's just a prolific coach, healer, teacher around this work. So I'm channeling my inner Nadiezhda here. In a session with her, she would have us say, I am a failure, and that's okay. Because there's, when we say something like that, that me, someone giving me money, I didn't earn it, that makes me a freeloader, which makes me a failure, we are unwilling to see that shadow in ourselves. And I've said some version of this too. I think it's very common. And it also is a sidebar. You start to, once you do this work for a little bit of time, you start to unearth all these qualities that have nothing to do with money because you just see how valuable it is to integrate the qualities that you haven't been willing to see in yourself. But anyway, I am a failure and that's okay. And if it's a charged enough word, it should feel, your body should fully reject it. F that. Can I curse on this show?
Yeah, you're allowed. Go for it.
Yeah. My body, when I say that, goes, fuck that. No, you're not. You don't have permission to be a failure. But it reminds me of that Carl Rogers quote, the curious paradox is that when I accept myself as I am, I'm then free to change, right? So if I can accept the fact that I am a failure, that's okay. With enough repetition, and Nadiezhda would say every belief begins as a lie, so it's going to feel like a lie for a little bit. After a little bit, this is the magic of the work. You say, I am a failure, and that's good. And you keep escalating this, and it's like, I'm a failure, and that's the best effing thing about me, baby. Like, that's usually where this work goes. And the reason, if it sounds really kooky, it kind of is, but the reason that this is so valuable is that when you don't expend energy trying not to be a failure, and you don't care whether or not you are a failure, if you can just say, I am a failure, I'm a success, I'm a failure, all the words, and it feels true in your body, then you are freer to have more access to all of who you are in any venture that you do. That is the name of the game with this stuff. So it doesn't, if it's not failure that has the most charge for you, greedy has had a lot of charge for me. Needy, I was thinking needy. If I ask someone for help and they give me money and I didn't earn it, needy is the really charged one for me. Like, man, I couldn't earn that myself. I had to ask someone else. I'm a needy little, you know what? And I've done a lot of work on integrating, you know, being needy is a great thing. And a question that we can ask ourselves is, what's great about being X, the quality that we don't want to see in ourselves? So when I say what's great about being needy, I start to collect all this amazing evidence. I ask for help. People are supporting me. I asked to be on your guy's show. How needy of me. But look, here I am having this amazing conversation because I was needy and asked to be on your guy's show. And you said yes. Right? So we start to build new stories, new evidence, new ways of being. That's the first thing I wanted to touch on. Second was when I received money from coaching, right? Is that the second thing I said? Money from coaching mm-hmm. versus accounting. Yeah. So the first Venmo that I got for coaching, it was for $50. It was the clumsiest interaction ever. I told the guy I would help him for free, and then I changed my mind, and it was this whole hot mess. But I remember after that one, the first time that he sent me $50 for a session, just thinking, man, it's so cool that I'm getting paid to do this thing that I'm so naturally good at. I'm basically listening to him. I'm helping him become a more complete whole version of himself. And that $50 meant so much to me. And in my accounting career, my billable rate, even when I just started as an intern and then an associate, which are similar rates, I was billing, I think, at least a few hundred dollars an hour at the company that I was working at. And I was getting paid really good money there. and juxtaposing the way that I felt about the $50 of aligned money as a coach versus the money I was making as an accountant, that was a good indicator of, man, like the number that I'm receiving isn't really what it's all about. Receiving money from that place of I'm doing something that's making a difference for someone else, it's aligned for me. I don't know exactly how that was connected to what you're saying, but I feel like it's important to say that the way that we receive money is very important. Making millions of dollars for a cause that you know is doing damage to the planet, in some way, even if you've done no inner work, I think there's going to be a level of dissonance inside of you. And the third thing, please remind me the third thing. Oh, have money. Money is an amplifier of who we already are. I believe that. And I started to talk a little bit about this, but you were saying, Gabe, that you do want to make a lot of money. You want your business and your podcast and all the other ventures that you might be up to in this world. There's a realization in there, it sounds like, that money can help amplify what you're creating. And you believe in what you're creating. And something that I see a lot of people in spiritual practices believe about money is that there's this aversion to it. I know this has been the case for me. Like, we see all of the evil and corruption that is done from people who have lots of money. And we see big business and we see denial of climate change. And all this is entangled with money. But there's also these little crevices of the world where people who have lots and lots of money are doing incredible things to help the environment, to promote healing, to do all this incredible work. And I am only beginning to scratch the surface on what you're grappling with, it sounds like too, that making lots and lots and lots of money can actually be a really powerful amplifier for the already really inherently generous and abundant person that I am. And to stay small and not make lots of money because there's so much poverty and suffering in the world, which is something that I get stuck in all the time, it's not really helping the cause. It's a way of wallowing for me. So I think it's important to not be so tied to money as it's the only thing that's going to give me freedom, but also not to do the exact opposite, which I see a lot of spiritual folks do. Money's bad and I don't need it, and push it away and that type of thing. So it's a really nuanced way of looking at it.
Yeah, thank you, Mike, for throwing those examples out there. I think, you know, what's striking me in that, right, is I feel like the gist of it is that is this idea that, like, it should be aligned, right? I think you use that word aligned or be coming from an embodied place. And that can mean a lot of different things. You know, when you were talking about that first earning as a coach, it's actually taking me back to several years back when, you know, that business I was alluding to, Breakout IQ, we had our first earning. I still remember that as like a like peak experience in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, like literally it's one of the things that comes to mind for me is it was like we got paid technically in advance, but it was after we delivered the service, so to speak. You know, our clients left, we closed the door. My partner in Avara and my cousin and I, we sat down, we just like reveled in that moment because it was something where we're like, oh, we created this thing that we wanted to put out in the world and someone valued it, to what Gabe, you were saying, right? Like, it wasn't about the dollars. In fact, I don't even remember what the dollars were, but it was just that, oh, someone valued it. And that was an exchange of love in a way, you know, more than even the financial transaction. And I think this idea of like aligned money versus not aligned money, I think is really, really, really interesting because especially where I live now, right, in the Bay Area, in, you know, arguably the richest kind of geography probably in the world, you know, in terms of all these people who work in tech and make just outsized sums of money, right? It's also interesting to see the, you know, the way you were talking about it, Mike, how like how money can be this like way to uncover and unpack what's happening for us. But what I see is also the opposite, right? Which is when people make a lot of money, it sort of is a cover or a mask, right, for what's happening underneath, right? It's like, oh, I'm making so much money, I must be, you know, leading like I must be doing well, right? It's that equation or equating of money and success, or earning money and living a good life. Mm-hmm. And what often, you know, I find myself trying to hold back my judgment, but at times I feel this like judgment coming up, or you know, this mm-hmm. observation that, hey, like, you know, and using the word you use, like, there's all this dissonance under that mask, you know, that you're just choosing not to look at because you have money. And it's just so prevalent, you know, and I find myself getting really bothered by that and even worked up about it. Even right now talking about it, I'm like, ah, you know, like, I'm like,
me too,
all these people, yeah, who have the means, who have that, you know, who are fortunate, people who have money are fortunate, right? Are not always, you know, driving it or utilizing it or directing that money, that energy, that love, you know, that's inherent in that money, in a way that's aligned, you know, and it's just, it presents as a mask. And so I'm just curious what that evokes for you, or if that's, you know, an observation you've had, or yeah, just what kind of comes to mind for you with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's reminding me, I grew up in an upper middle class suburb of New York City. I live in the New York City area now. And I remember when I was growing up, you're bringing up a lot of the beliefs that I learned when I was little. I looked around at the wealthiest people in my area. And I also learned something similar to what you're saying. People who have money are miserable. People who have money are mean. I saw a lot of judgment from people who had lots of money, kind of looking down on people who didn't have lots of money. And so what I got entangled with money, obviously it wasn't the money that was doing the judging and all the other unhappiness and misery. It was the people. But what I internalized was people who have lots of money are those things. And so therefore I will not have, I'll have just enough that I can afford everything that I want in my life, but I'll never get to that next level because that's going to be misery and unhappiness and judgment, right? So yeah, I think it also can point us to, so that's one way that maybe I in my own life am unconsciously blocking myself from allowing more money into my life, but it can also signpost us to what we are committed to, right? Us having a reaction to someone not spending money in a way that we feel is aligned for us, I'd be curious what's it pointing to for you, right? Like, these people aren't spending money with love is what I'm hearing. And that's something that I would probably say too, that's important to me. Like, spending money and earning money with love is important to me. So when I notice that I'm getting really agitated about a story like that, I mean, sometimes I just get caught in the story. Let's be honest, we're humans, and sometimes I'm just committed to being right in that moment. But if I can really drop in and see what's really about underneath the hood, I think it's important to examine, well, what is it triggering in me about that? And then how can I be in a way that is aligned with the thing that I'm judging about them, right? So if I'm saying they're miserable, unhappy, they're not spending with love, I get to look at those things in myself. Am I doing those things? And then what needs to happen for me to be more aligned with the ways that I say I want to be? So that's really what was coming up for me from your share there, that there's even more, there's just so much warped into the way that we see money. I was also thinking about pop culture references, right? Like Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, the movie, and all these documentaries that are exposés on people who are in these immense places of power and financial fortune, who have all these big scandals. How many pop culture references are there to people who make lots of money, who are doing immense good with it? I mean, we have some templates. There's people like Oprah out there, but in my estimation, it takes a little bit more digging. So I'm at a phase in my life where I'm trying to do more digging around that. Like, who is living the money story that I aspire to, and how can I live in that story now?
Yeah. And one thing I'll just throw in there really quickly is, I really appreciate you reflecting all that back, Mike, because what the thought that's immediately coming to mind for me is, I'm like, oh, the thing that I see myself judging is actually what I'm judging about myself, because I don't think I actually myself embody the values of love and generosity that I would want to embody. So I'll just leave it at that. And Gabe, I know you're about to jump in there.
No, yeah. I think lots of really interesting threads in this conversation. One place I see it coalescing around is what people can do to amplify and give life to their passions. I think that's a core idea we explore here on the show, is living a meaningful life, living a purposeful life that's connected to what you believe in, linking your actions with your beliefs, and through that, making a better world, creating a world that is inspiring and loving, and that touches us and touches one another. And so I'm curious, Mike, if, you know, thinking a little bit more practically for people who are listening to this, what can people do to start connecting those dots? We've talked about some of the inner work that's needed of kind of coming to clarity around what is driving you, what's in the way. But if people really want to, I want to come up with some sort of alternative to that, put your money where your mouth is phrase, right? But the kind of spirit of like, not where your mouth is, but where your heart is or something, or, you know, like how can money actually be drawn towards what you are passionate about and propel it into the world, and with or without money, right? To use your phrase, how can we live more from our passions and create a better world that way? What are some specific steps you would encourage people to take?
There's a couple of things that immediately come to mind. And I think the most practical is if you have a favorite coffee shop, favorite local bookstore, something or someone that is embodying a belief that you want in yourself. Like if kindness is important to you and your coffee barista is really kind, leave them $2 more of a tip than you normally would leave. I think that's a really practical way to start. And if you haven't really peeked under the hood, it's actually going to probably feel more uncomfortable than you think to do that, because you're so used to not doing that. You're just, I only tip for, this is at least what I've been enculturated into, tip for waiter or waitress service. You don't tip for coffee and you don't tip for this, right? So the first time that I tipped $3 for coffee, I was like, what are you doing, Mike? You don't tip $3 for coffee. But that was something that I aspired to. Generosity is important to me. Kindness is important to me. I wanted to honor the fact that I saw kindness. If you look at money as an energy, I'm flowing some energy towards that kindness. So that's one thing. I realized at one point that I was listening to all these podcasts for free and I wasn't paying other people for the amazing work that they were doing. And I'm not saying that everyone listening to this needs to go and join a course or hire a coach, but if conversations like these are enlivening for you, like sign up for a course that feels within means for you, within reason, but also a little bit of an edge for you. I've alluded to the fact that, or maybe even explicitly mentioned actually, that I'm Jewish. And on this upcoming Monday, I am starting a course called Embodied Kabbalah, which explores Jewish mysticism. And for a long time, I've had this belief, like, why would I spend money on doing a course about that? I could just read the book and I could go to a temple for free, but spirituality is something that's important to me. I want to align my money and my commitments to that. So there's really basic ways of like, what are organizations that are doing work that I'm aligned with, or what are people that are exemplifying qualities that are aligned with me, that if you just put some money in that area, it starts to move you. It moves you in ways that you wouldn't even imagine. I mean, I marvel at the fact that the simple practice of leaving more of a tip than you normally would, how that begets more generosity in your life. And then it trickles into other non-money related areas too. Like I'm more and more comfortable paying a random person a compliment when I see that, because that's something that is important to me. I want to acknowledge and honor. And I did that at the beginning of the show. I appreciate you guys. I think you guys are awesome at what you do. I wanted to let you know that. I would have thought it was too weird at some point to do that, but money could be an amplifier of that, right? So does that answer the question for like more practical ways of looking at this?
Yeah, I'll add a follow up. I think that's great in terms of flowing energy towards those things that you believe in that you see on the outside. My follow up would be, what about on the inside? So I guess I see the link that you're making between, as I do that in the external world, it starts to move things inside of me and I see what's going on for me. But you know, if people want to express and live out their own passion that they're seeing reflected in the behaviors of others in the world, how can they get their energy centered around that passion within themselves to actually, you know, become that barista, quote unquote, that's being nice, to become that organization or that coach that's offering that course, and so on and so forth, you know, into whatever, so many different arenas.
I'll share a couple of things that are coming up for me. There was, on a recent retreat that I went on, we did an exercise called Spot It, Got It. And I wrote down three people who I most deeply admire. And then for each of those people, I wrote down the quality that they embodied for me. Brene Brown, vulnerability. I put my dad for resilience, and I put the coach that I work with for compassion. And the exercise, Spot It, Got It, meant, well, if I admire those qualities most about another person, they are qualities of me. Compassion, resilience, and vulnerability. So I can make those an expression of the way that I move through the world, right? So if what you're saying is, how can I, if these are the things that are most important to me, how can I move it into a creation of some kind, right? Or a business. And when I started my coaching practice, it was largely because I saw other people helped me tap into what was great about me. And I wanted to help other people do that. And I think there's a few different access points to that. One is you could do some values work. And I'm sure that you guys in your coaching practice do some version of that. What are 3 to 5 words that have the most charge for you? Like, if someone was giving your eulogy at your funeral right now, what are the ways that you would want to be described? And why are those words the most important to you? If those words have enough charge, they should be, you should feel something when someone tells you, like, if you told me right now, I so appreciate your vulnerability and your compassion and your empathy and your resilience, that those words mean something to me. And if I can feel into what those words mean to me, they become an expression that kind of moves through, whether it's my business or any interaction that I have in the world, frankly, they just become ways of being in me that I don't have to flip a switch on and to make the choice of, like, I think I want to be vulnerable right now. It just becomes something that is an integrated part of who I am. So I think when I first started my coaching business, a lot of people would say things to me like, I want to start a YouTube channel, but I don't think I could do it. Or I want to post more openly on LinkedIn, or I want to start a blog. I think all of us have that in us, and we are scared of being perceived a certain way. And so that's what keeps us boxed in. But if we can build evidence towards why those things are so important to us, then eventually I think the risk of not doing it becomes minimized, and the risk of doing it becomes, or it's the opposite, right? Like, the risk of not doing it then becomes far greater than the risk of doing it. And that's what happened for me. One of the most fearful people you would ever meet. I think people were shocked when I started my blog and started my coaching business. I was the last person that anyone ever would have expected to start a podcast, to start a blog, to start a YouTube channel, any of that. I didn't even speak up in a meeting. I had no idea who I was. I felt so incredibly lost. I still sometimes feel so incredibly lost and post something and I'm like, oh my God, this person might see that. And what are they going to think about me? But because I have a certain baseline understanding of what's most important to me, I think I can come back to center in that way. And when we don't have a center, that's when it becomes so disorienting that we don't know how to get started. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, this is a message we come back to quite a bit on this show also, right? Which is understanding what we're about, what we care about, is very foundational, right? And it's what you said, it's the center, it's the baseline against which we can, you know, look at and evaluate all of our actions, our thoughts, our decisions, our feelings, right? And it's a thing we can come back to, and it gives us the ability to choose. Because if we're out of center, right, or not operating from that foundation, if we can connect with that, notice it, notice that dissonance, we can bring ourselves back, right, to a place where we're operating in a aligned, value-driven place. And I loved what you said earlier, Mike, about money being a part of that centering process, because mm-hmm. there are so many emotions, so many just associations that we have with money. If money can be an extension of our values, I imagine, I know for myself, even as I was imagining what you're saying, like leaving an extra tip, you know, whatever, I was like, even just hearing you talk about it, I was like, oh yeah, I could feel that that would be uncomfortable for me, you know? And the, I think the like most recent example of my trying to overcome that is there's this artist named Harry Mack, who's this like freestyle rapper who I like really, really, really like. And I like went down a rabbit hole of like listening to a bunch of his stuff. And I mentioned him a few times. And it was like, there was this point where I like recognized, I was like, whoa, like I've really been taken on this journey by this artist, you know, and so many different things, all uplifting, all inspirational, all just, you know, I was like, oh, what I've gotten just from watching this guy's YouTube videos, how do I even like describe it? And so for the first time, I like became a Patreon subscriber, you know, giving a few bucks a month, right, to this artist. Just, and it was just, it was, and I felt all the things you were mentioning, right? That discomfort, that kind of like, oh, is this like, can I, you know, should I be doing this now? Should I wait till I do it later? Oh, should I be giving it to like charity instead of, you know, this artist who's like kind of on the up and up? You know, all those like, all these questions around just evaluating like, oh, is this the right quote unquote use of money, right? And on the other hand, I think when I put aside those feelings and just did it, or even after I did it, I saw those feelings, but just, you know, looked past them for a second, it felt right, you know, I think to use that word, it just felt like, yeah, like this is an exchange of energy, right? And then funnily enough, his concert tour was called Energy Exchange. And I was like, oh yeah, like there's something here, you know, in terms of that, you know, money being a part of it. And it comes up in coaching a lot too, right? Where people are like, coaches sometimes will label the transaction, the financial transaction, as part of an energy exchange, where it's like, hey, like, you know, this is something that we're in together, and you know, it's not just a marker of your commitment or an investment in my business, but it's an energy exchange where we're, you know, approaching this relationship in a certain way. So, you know, I kind of want to use that as just a springboard to ask this question that, you know, I feel like we've been talking a lot about the individual journey, you know, through money, right? And the question I want to ask is, how, you know, how do we take our individual relationships with money, our stories and narratives around money, and project them onto others, right? And specifically, like, how do we think it affects the way we not just view, but like connect with other people, right? And I know we've thrown some of those narratives out there already, right? Like, oh, people with money are bad, people without money, you know, those things might be surface level, but I kind of want to understand, or maybe just for you, Mike, like, how do those things come into play? You know, how does it affect your relationships, your dynamics? How do you see that happening with people you work with, maybe even as an accountant, right? I'm just curious what that sparks for you.
I'll see if I can get to that. That's a hard question. It's a really profound and good one. And there's also a loop that I wanted to close on where I was before. Or I think, especially if someone's new to this work, I remember feeling about myself, I don't know what I care about. I don't feel like I have any special particular gifts. And the loop that I wanted to close here is, if you reach out to a group of say 10 to 20 people who know you relatively well in different domains of your life and ask targeted questions like, what do you reliably, how do I reliably show up for you? What do you count on me for? What's the energy you feel when you're with me? What do you count on me for? Things like that are, they can be mirrors held up to us that if we aren't in tune with what our own gifts are really helpful. So like I know early in my journey, that was really important to have reflected back to me. I learned a lot about myself. People saw me in ways that I didn't see for myself. And now I've worked on integrating, like a lot of people reflected to me that I was a quiet leader. And that was an oxymoron in my head for a long time, right? So anyway, I think if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know what my values are, maybe just ask a few people around you what you're counted on for in their life, or simply reflect on things that bring you joy. You've had joy in your life. What are things that bring you joy? And how can money be an expression of that joy? Right. So I just wanted to close that loop. So I think Rahul, I want to go back to your question and maybe reflect it back because it's a hard one. So are you saying we've spent a lot of time talking about the individual, right? But you're saying like, how can we make this something that's more, how do we make it more systematic? Like how do we influence other people to adopt the beliefs if they're aligned for us?
No, actually it's more like how do our individual narratives around money affect the way that we connect with other people, right? Mm. How does it come into that interrelational dynamic just being a part of, you know, a moving society?
I'll just share what's happening for me. I don't know if this is a direct answer to your question, but I've fallen into this trap my whole life, and I'm really trying to be more active about being among different people who don't share the exact upbringing that I have and certain belief systems, whatever. So yeah, I think that when I grew up, I surrounded myself with mostly other Jewish, white, same age, similar life experience guys. And that, so there becomes this kind of groupthink around everything, and money is included in that groupthink. So I think in upper middle class New York City suburbia, there is a belief that a good job, like I imagine for you, Rahul, with immigrant family, doctor, lawyer, accountant, right? I did it, engineer. And I chose accountant, you chose engineer. So I think one way that I look at this is to surround myself with more diversity in every single sense of the word. People who think differently, look differently, grew up in a different circumstance than I did, different age, everything. That changes the way that I think about myself. It changes the way that I internalize beliefs. I can get really calcified in my worldview is right if I'm only surrounded by other people who grew up in the New York City area, who also have upper middle class upbringings, who also went on to be doctors, lawyers, accountants, etc. And with the diversity of thinking and diversity in every sense of the word, we start to realize we're so much more multidimensional than whatever worldview we had before. And I think money then can be an expression of so many different things. I don't know if that's a direct answer to your question, but that's just what was coming up for me, is that, you know, money can be this really interesting way to connect with people from various different perspectives and beliefs, and you can adopt new interests and new ways of being. And that's certainly been the case for me.
Yeah, no, that absolutely, Mike, touches on what I'm getting at, right? And I think this idea of being open to different ways of thinking just generally, but again, even coming to money, makes a lot of sense, right? Because there is an environmental component, right, to how we relate to anything, but, you know, especially something like money, which is so present in our daily lives, certainly, you know, that plays a role. And so just as we, you know, start to approach the end here, Mike, I just wanted to, you know, get a sense. I know, you know, we've covered so many different topics and areas. I'm curious if there's, you know, one or two takeaways that you'd really want to leave our listeners with, you know, around this entire topic of our narratives around money.
Mm. whatever qualities you hold in the highest esteem, you are those with and without money. And if you don't believe that to be true, then just keep working the belief. I am an abundant being with and without money. And if that doesn't feel true, then just repeat it over. If there's a level of truth to it, then if you repeat it over and over again, it will become something that's integrated. Allow money to be an extension of what you are committed to. When folks make aligned, committed choices in their life, then beautiful things happen, right? That's the way that energy continues to flow and become an amplifier. And waiting for a certain dollar amount in your bank account to be generous, that's a tough way to live. And waiting for a certain dollar amount in your bank account to say, I'm going to be free and live abundantly, that's a tough way to live. But if you can start to make the choice to be generous and abundant and allow your money commitments to follow in kind, whatever way that works for you. Like you and I both shared, Rahul, that leaving a little tip or subscribing to a Patreon account for a few bucks a month, because that hasn't been something we're used to, it feels like, feels uncomfortable for a little bit, right? So just start where you start. There isn't a right or wrong way to do this. Just start where you start. And I think and maybe another thing that's coming up for me here is that a lot of times the things that feel nearest and dearest to our heart, they feel good. They're an idea that bubbles up in us. And it's only just immediately after that happens that all the other beliefs usually click in around it. So I'm making up this story in my head right now. When you gave money to the artist's Patreon account, it felt totally innerly aligned in the beginning. You were like, that would be amazing. And then all these other scripts kicked in after the fact, right? Oh, that's, you could be donating it to this charity. You could be doing this. But it's a lot of times those are the best ideas, the ones that feel like edgy and scary to start. So I would encourage everyone to lean into that a little bit.
Well, Mike, it's been such a treat to have this conversation with you, and really just want to thank you, not just for your time, attention, energy, positivity, but just from a content basis, just helping me, I can speak for myself, really examine my own narratives, and my biases and just everything around money, right? I think this is just step one or conversation one of what I imagine could be many, to mm-hmm. continue down this road. And it's like you said, it's a practice, and just appreciate your being a part of this practice and for planting some seeds that I know I want to go off and think about as soon as we wrap up here. But I really just want to thank you for being a part of this. Mm.
It was an absolute pleasure and privilege. Thank you, Gabe and Rahul, for having me. You have such high quality guests on the show. You guys put out such high quality content. It is truly an honor to be one of the guests among the many that are putting out really powerful work into this world. So thank you again.
Well, and we are fortunate and privileged to have you on the show. So thank you, Mike, again. And for those that listen, that are listening, I think Mike's takeaway is already captured it all, but this is really an invitation to examine your own relationship with money, and with your own values and the type of life that you want to lead and really what brings you alive and how money can be a supporting part of that journey of bringing more aliveness into your day to day. So, if you enjoyed listening to this, please consider sharing it with a friend or leaving us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We will link to Mike's podcast as well. So we encourage you to hop over and listen to Mike's Search for Meaning. Thank you again for tuning in. And we look forward to seeing you again, our next episode.